Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to Unscripted, a podcast about life, living, and sorrow, which is an odd combination, I will admit. But the reality is we're not talking about sorrow. We're talking about the reality of life and how we go about living has everything to do with what we do with sorrow. And so that's why I created this podcast. The other reason behind it is to allow you a window into someone who is actually walking through grief. And I think it has a lot to say about the choices we make about everyday life. And so that's why I'm doing this. I don't know how long this is going to go. It's time limited. I never know how long it's going to take me to cover whatever it is I have to talk about tonight. But I thought that one of the things that I wanted to do is to make sure that those of you who are listening for the first time, you have an idea what you've gotten yourself into, because there's no, as the name implies of the podcast, there's no script. I am somewhat free associating around a particular topic related to my own journey through grief, and I don't think I'm all that unusual. I think the only thing that's really different about it is that I'm actually watching. I think generally the people that are going through grief are simply experiencing it. They're not really paying attention to the nature of what they're experiencing or anything like that. And so that's really what this podcast is for, is to do some reflection, maybe tune people into what they're going through at the time. But I will admit that this is week two since the major event occurred 2 weeks ago on a Sunday at 12:35 a.m. A friend of mine from 31 years died. He took his last breath and moved into the embrace of his Abba. And, you know, there's a lot about the grieving process, what we experience. It is wrought with all the things that we deal with really every day. And that's why I called it life, living, and sorrow, because the things that we experience every day shows up in our sorrow. And the reality is why shouldn't it, right? I recognize that my sorrow is kind of a background or a subtext to my life. And interestingly enough, I think in a lot of ways, what we do with sorrow has everything to do with how we go about living. And that's the thing I think we have to pay the most attention to. So that's what this is for. And the irony is that what goes around comes around. When I first started the very first podcast that morphed into the Psych Monologues and then eventually into the Outpost podcast, which is the other one on this slowly developing media channel called Outpost Media, it really was in response to an immense sorrow that I saw my students experiencing, and I was experiencing too with them, because we were going through the pandemic and we were all sent home and locked down and all that jazz, and they missed their graduation. And so they had a variety of losses that they were contending with along the way. And so I thought, well, I really don't have an opportunity to teach them in person. So one way that I can do that is by reaching into their everyday experiences with something like a podcast. So years ago, and just to give you a piece of history, years ago, I actually did a podcast on grieving called From Mourning to Mourning, and that was before it was in fashion to do podcasts like this. Now, I think most everybody would say that this is not the most sought-after podcast with this kind of topic ever. I think generally we tend to look for things that make us feel good, and we assume that anything having to do with death and sorrow is not going to make us feel good. And the thing that's always fascinating to me is how, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, everybody knows her. She created the five stages, which everybody still loves to beat that drum, which annoys me to no end, because ultimately people that are going through grief don't experience it as stage one, stage two, stage three. They experience it as a cycle of emotions and things that are related to the stages she talked about. And the irony is that when you look at how Kubler-Ross looked at how people tended to use her stages, she was very frustrated, I think would be a good word for it. She was frustrated that people were using it in such a linear fashion when that doesn't even come close to how we experience loss and grief. We experience it in very cyclical sort of ways, and that's exactly really why I wrote my book, Seasons of Our Grief, because I think it comes a little closer. It may not be perfect, but it comes a little closer to describing our experiences with grief, and that is seasons. And some seasons are worse than others. And I think if I were looking at my experiences right now, where I'm at with my grief, I definitely am in the winter of my grief. The numbness, which is frightening at times, the kind of recollections that come unbidden into and intruding into my day and into my evenings, all of that is very much a part of it. And so I think just to give you kind of a sense of context, I think, for what I want to talk about is I'm not going out of my way to teach you about anything. I am going out of my way to describe what my experience is like and offer whatever observations or wisdom I might have, having gone through this four different times. My dad died when I was a kid, and I didn't go through it well there. I put it off by 10 years. My adopted mom died about 10 years ago, and then my mother-in-law died, and then my father-in-law died. And those are four very significant losses that affected me and continue to affect me. And then this one. And this one I have experienced in very different ways. I think my propensity is to compare it, which is something I talked about in the last episode, is to compare it to family members. And I'm not a family member. I'm a friend. I think my Ed Smith, my friend, would call me his best friend or one of his best friends. But I'm not a family member. I don't have the history that the family members have. But that doesn't diminish the importance or the profoundness of what I experienced in losing a friend after 31 years. And 3 decades is a long time. There's a lot of memories that build up around that that I think are honorable. They're worth honoring. And they're honoring in a variety of ways. Sometimes that honor comes in the form of tears. Sometimes it comes in the form of just memories and recollecting and looking back and looking at it with some measure of appreciation and gratitude, and certainly a certain level of wistfulness. There is certainly a lot of it that goes into, I think, wishing that I could just hear his voice one more time, or we could share one more joke, which was very much a part of our relationship, and hear his thoughts on teaching in the academy, which we talked about often because we were both college professors. And so that is very much a part of the landscape that I think is just part of honoring the relationship that we have with someone. And so there's all of that that is the backdrop to this. And that's why I think in some respects this podcast is an important one. I'm not I'm reflecting on life and living and the importance of experiencing sorrow, which I think is part of the human experience. It's part of the broken human experience, I might add. God never designed life to be this way. But when things went south and sin entered our DNA and our conversation and our lives, that broke a lot of things, including the nature of our relationships and including death. And now we have to contend with that. That wasn't how it was originally designed. And so I think we have to wrestle with the realities of what we live in and realize that we long for what it was originally designed to be, and that is always in relationship, always accessible, always available and pure, and all of the things that we appreciate, even in the human realm, during the time before heaven itself. So what I thought I'd talk about is I had a conversation with someone, and the comment that was made was, it's really hard to accept condolences because it feels like I'm having to live over again the reality of my loss. And that's, this may be a lesson not only for those who are expressing their condolences, expressing their sympathy for what somebody might be experiencing in loss, but also for us that are experiencing it. I think one of the biggest challenges that it feels to me, at least in light of the world that I'm certainly living in, is that there's a certain tyranny about it. Life goes on, and that's that there's something in us that just wants to stop. Now, that doesn't mean that I want to wallow in my sorrow, but at the same time, it seems like the importance of what has happened in our lives has to have some measure of, how do I express it? I mean, I had some measure of honor to set aside time to let it exist in a way that is separate from the ongoing reality we live in. And it's really pretty remarkable. And I mentioned this not too long ago to someone, is that you walk back into life after experiencing a loss like this, and you watch people go on about their lives and do their own thing and deal with their own, you know, struggles and challenges and everything else. And there's a part of you that wants to say, do you have any idea what has happened in the universe when my friend or my spouse or my parent died? And no, of course not. I mean, that's the reality is they don't. They can't. And yet we have this, I think, sometimes unrealistic. It is unrealistic. I know it. But it would be really nice if people could find a way to do that. And they can't know. So they're set up. Let's just be blunt, right? They're set up. I want them to know something they can't know. And so what am I looking for, I think, is the question. And I think to some degree, our experiences that we have in sorrow and loss, we look for someone to validate them for us instead of giving us the freedom to experience them as they are. And that's where the problem, I think, comes in, and it interferes with the freedom that we have to feel what we have at the time that we feel it. And so we put it off, or we contain it, or we suppress it, or whatever we do with it, distract from it, or anything else. And because we're waiting for someone to say, wow, that was a huge loss. The funny thing about that is that even when someone says that, it's still not enough. I mean, that's the strange part of this, is that we want somebody, or I want somebody, to recognize the profoundness of what I have gone through and what I continue to feel. But how can they possibly communicate that in a way that captures what I am feeling? And quite honestly, they can't. Because I think, again, is my experience isn't enough, and I need somebody to validate my experience for it to be enough. But the person I'm looking to validate it for me can't validate it enough. Here's all those enough words. And so where does that leave me? Well, it leaves me alone and isolated and feeling very poignantly separated from people and feeling like you're going through life and going through the motions and doing the things that you need to do, but feeling somewhat disconnected from it because you're in another world of the person that you have lost. And that, I, you know, to some degree, I listen, even as I'm listening to myself here, but I listen to all of that, and it's like, there's no way that this can make any sense at all to anyone. Because I'm asking people to do something that I've already set them up to not be able to do, which is patently cruel. It's just asking a 2-year-old to dunk the basketball on a 10-foot basket. It can't be done, and yet I keep looking for that to happen. Now let me wind back the tape a minute. The thing that is the problem here isn't what we are experiencing. The thing that's the problem is what we are looking for from other people to validate our experience so we can have our experience. And that's where the problem comes in, because we don't think that we are enough for our experience to be valid in and of itself. And see, that's where the problem comes in, right? Because I want somebody to tell me that it's valid, and then I can experience it, rather than what I am experiencing is valid, and I'm going to find a way to give myself the freedom to feel it as I feel it at the time I feel it. Now, I'll be the first to admit that doing that way tends to sensitize me to feeling like nobody can understand. And there are, even though I know this is probably not true, but there are people that have expectations of me just to get back on the saddle, get going, get, you know, move on with life, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, I can't do that. Quite honestly, if I'm blunt, I don't want to do that. And, you know, so I'm already at cross purposes with the people that I'm setting up to not be able to do, so that I can have validity in feeling what I am feeling. Now, the thing to keep in mind here, and I think that can be added into this, is that we're always looking for someone to join us in what we're feeling. We always are. Because we don't think, I mean, quite honestly, I don't think we think we're enough. That my own experience is valid because I'm experiencing it. And some of that is we've been drilled with don't be self-centered and self-absorbed and all that kind of jazz. And there's some truth to that. I mean, it's very easy for us to get very centered in on ourselves and lose sight of everyone else. And so there's no balance in that. And done at an extreme level can seem even worse in terms of, like I said, being very selfish and self-absorbed. But those of us that want to do everything we can not to do that and still stay connected with people and still stay connected with ourselves are caught in a terrible conundrum of sorts, because we want some validation, But we know that the validation people can give us, and this is repeating a little bit here, but we know the validation people can give us is not going to be enough, because we need to simply say it's okay where I'm at and right now, and I can be that way. Now, you may have heard it another way, and that is it's okay to not be okay. I've heard some say it's okay to not be okay, but don't stay that way. Well, who gets to choose how long you stay that way? And that's a problem, I think. I'm pretty sure that it is. And the first hurdle that I have to get over is, you know, I'm not okay. I have had people, and there's always this little twinge, they're saying, how you're doing? I'm saying, I'm not doing very good at all. And they're very compassionate. I'm surrounded by people that are very sensitive to what I'm going through and the loss that I've experienced. But there's some sense of me that feels like I'm kind of letting people down when I say I'm not doing well at all, even though I don't give any indication that I'm not. And again, some of that is our definitions of what's being not okay, right? Because we can still function and do things and accomplish things and get things done and everything else while we're not being okay in even the emotional or even the spiritual realm. So there's a lot of that in there that I think we have to contend with and wrestle with, quite honestly. We experience the loss because we were designed to experience the loss, because we are designed to experience connection. And loss is the break in that connection. And that's really, really, really hard. One of the things that oftentimes I will talk about and remind people about is this whole area that we talk about in psychology, at least, and that's attachment. And the what we experience in grief is connected to the level of attachment we have with the people in our lives. And you see it everywhere. You see it with kids. When a parent walks out of the room, the little ones that get in huge distress because a parent has left. And now we have it even as adults when somebody who we love leaves through death or whatever the circumstances. And that I think is an important point to keep in mind when we're talking about this whole area of loss and sorrow and everything else. So let me loop back to where I started. When people offer condolences to us, we have a choice to make whether or not we are willing to live where we're at as one who is grieving and experienced a loss. And if you read my first book on grief, I liken it to a psychological burn wound. And if you've ever had a burn wound, it is extremely painful, one. And two, it is extremely sensitive to outside stimulation of some sort, whatever that might be. And I think in a lot of cases, if you're somebody that's coming alongside someone who's grieving, just realize that it's a little bit like walking around without skin on. Every touch hurts. Every touch from the words you use hurt. And that's very much a part of the condolences. People are doing that out of a well-meaning, a loving heart. And I'm so sorry for your loss, except the person who's hearing it is now running back through the reels, the reel of tape of the loss that has happened in their lives. And so, yes, it feels like a replay. It feels like somebody has just taken their finger and poked it in this wound, and it is, you know, gone off the charts in terms of pain. And yes, that's part of it. That is part of it. And so I think for those people that are offering condolences, there's a certain measure of compassion, of empathy that can be communicated to say, I know that's probably hard to hear, and I know that where you're at right now, that may not feel like it helps very much. I understand that. That's okay. It's okay to be where you're at. And that's what's key here, I think, is it's okay to be where we're at, because if we're going to move from where we're at, we have to have the permission to be where we are. And we need to give ourselves permission, as well as key people in our lives also giving us permission to do that as well. There's a false notion here, I think, of if I say to the person, if I'm a person trying to help and come alongside somebody who's grieving, that if I say it's okay to not be okay, then I'm giving them permission to stay there. And the reality is, and what is so missing in all of this, is one, it's not about you and what you have to say to the person. And two, so what? So what? If they stay there a little longer than you're comfortable or what you might think is the right way to do it. And that's the key. Because I can be supportive and encouraging and compassionate with somebody else and concern myself less about what the future is going to look like and how long will it take them to get through it, versus I'm responsible for their future and I need to find a way to get them out of it. And one way to do that sometimes for some people is to put a bow around it and say, well, they're in a better place. They're not experiencing as much pain. They're part of a bigger celebration now that they're in heaven, whatever. And quite honestly, it's really hard for people, I think, in the Christian world to look at somebody saying that and say, yeah, I know that's true, but that's not helpful right now. Because that's the truth. That is the truth, is it's not helpful right now. And we may need something to anchor us for the future, but we're going to get there on our time, not on your time. And that's, again, part of the key, I think, to pay attention to when we're walking alongside people. Now, again, I'm in this myself, and I would affirm the fact of what that person said, is that people say that to me, and suddenly this tape is flipped on, and it runs through what has occurred over the last couple of weeks. And I'm facing it down. Because next week is the memorial service, and seeing all the family and interacting with them and everything else, it is all over again. We are back in it again with one person missing that is profoundly painful to have missing. And so that is key to understand here. So, but the thing, let me just drive this home and then I'll land the plane. The key here is that if I know how to grieve, then I know how to live, because I have accepted the reality of death. And with that comes the importance of life and investment and connection and all of those sorts of things. And that those things are always connected. So, you know, you point to why do a podcast like this? And it's not about sorrow. It's about life and living. That's why I connect those things in the title, because life and living is connected to sorrow and then connection. And sorrow is directly connected to connection. Sometimes we have a choice to make between safety and the lack of connection, or suffering and sorrow because of connection. And those two things always tend to go together. So that's some food for thought here in terms of the journey through grief some thoughts for you to consider, at least. I think these are every bit as relevant for everyday life as they are for me speaking out of my journey through grief. But be that as it may, I sure hope it's helpful to you, something to consider and to think about. The couple things just to remind you about, and this is highly, like I said, kind of unscripted, but you know, if you want more information, I wrote a book called The Seasons of Our Grief. You can find it at seasonsofourgrief.com. And that could be a helpful book to help kind of understand the warp and woof of this journey we call grief. Or you can also order online there as well. The first book I wrote on grief called Grieving the Loss of Someone You Love. You can find them both in the store at sgi-net.org. You can visit there. There's all sorts of things. I would encourage you to sign up to be part of the community. We send out newsletters periodically. I can't say it's monthly, but it's close. And a variety of kind of inspirational writing things to read and to consider. And then just the schedule of things that we're trying to accomplish in the SGI community, which is online right now. So sgi-net.org is the place to go and to check it out. The two books that I've written that perhaps would be helpful in talking about and talking through some of these things. I think that's probably it for tonight. Thanks so much for joining me. I appreciate you taking time out to listen in. And if you have questions or anything, feel free to either message me on Instagram at @SGI_international or at ray.mitch at Facebook. Either one of those places, you can message me there. And I'd be glad to answer or to answer questions or to pick it up in the next episode of Unscripted. So thanks again for joining me. And as always, love you. Later. Bye.